If you want to take out a Bible and turn to the book of Philippians, first chapter, we'll begin there in just a moment. You know, I'll go ahead and get this out of the way. Things always happen that are kind of amusing whenever I go somewhere, and I'll just give you some advice. This is free. It won't charge you a thing for it. If you ever go to Ecuador, do not ever drink goat milk fresh from a goat. It does things to your digestive system that are unspeakable. I mean, just tell you. Every time I go to Ecuador, I am in awe of these mountains. I have been blessed in so many ways in my life to see so many tremendous mountain ranges. I've been to the Smokies in eastern Tennessee. I've been to the Rocky Mountains and the Tetons up in Colorado and on through to Wyoming. I have seen the Sangre de Cristo Mountains in New Mexico, seen the Ozarks. I've been blessed to see the Sierra Madres in Mexico. There's something about the Andes Mountains, and I can't figure out what it is exactly, but they are they're majestic. It's almost as though they know that they are so much more impressive than the others. And yet they're humble. Whether I'm standing on the valley floor looking up at them, watching them as they pierce the sky, or whether I'm looking down from an airplane, I just stand in awe of them. And sometimes I just look at them, and I cannot believe how small I am. As beautiful as they are, as wonderful as they are, when I get to this little bitty town in southern Ecuador, this little bitty place that smells in ways that you cannot imagine, that is hot and humid and has mosquitoes that are unspeakable, when I see these people and hear them sing and worship with them and see their faces and feel their embrace, it makes those mountains look small. And it warms my heart because I think about them. Even though they're so far away, even though it's a different culture, a different place, a different language, that we worship the same God in the same way. And they're my family. They're a part of me. And I want you to know that they're a part of you too. Because they love you even though they've never seen you. They ask about you. They want to know who you are, what you're like. They do love you. I want to tell you something. First time I ever went to Ecuador was back in 2007. I went with Olin Britnell. Olin took me in. We went into this little city. If you notice, there's a little red dot down here at the bottom on a city called Machala, right about there. Walked into this church the first time, and they were meeting in what amounted to be a storefront. There were just very few of them there. And I immediately felt welcome. I learned a lot about the church there. And I'll put this up here. I'm not going to read through it. You can just look at all of it, but I want to make a point to you. The church there in Machala started in about 2005. Well, the church in Ecuador started in about 1997. And my point is that it's young. It hasn't been there that long. You know, we have churches here. You go down to Mooresville, you find a church that was established, 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago. It's easy to go to Mexico and you find churches that were established in the 40s and the 50s. They've been there a long time. The church has not been there that long in Ecuador. And I think that's part of the reason that maybe I'm drawn to it. Maybe that's part of the reason that I feel a need to go, a need to be there, a need to do what I can. And I want to share some of the stories and the experiences that Papa and I had when we went a week ago. That's the second time he's been with me. I don't, to be quite honest, I think I've been 10, 11 times. And every time I go, I find something new and I have a new feeling, a different feeling. And I told him, to be quite honest, I've been places before. I've made trips to Mexico and different places. And I've come home before feeling like, did I really do any good? Did I really make a difference? But I told Papa when we were sitting in the airport the other day ready to leave, We made a difference in their lives. We helped them. I knew that they were going through some difficult things, but I didn't know how bad it was until I got there. This is where the church meets. That's the outside of the building, little sign right there. And yes, Renee, that sign is crooked. And it bothers me every time I see it. And every time I see it, I want to climb up there and fix it. But I always think, who's going to fix me if I fall? Now, they meet over here in this little cleared out area on this concrete pad next to the yellow bus. Very uncomfortable seats. It's always hot. It's always humid. There are always bugs. But I don't ever think about it when I'm there. I get caught up in the singing. I get caught up in the praying. I get caught up in the people. And it just doesn't matter to me what it's like there. This is the picture of the Christians that meet there. I love the panoramic view of on an iPhone because it makes me look tall and thin. And Ecuadorians like it because it makes them look taller too. Just incredible people. Now one thing about that I want to point out to you. There was about 45, 48 people there that Sunday morning. You think that's a pretty good number. Well, here's the problem though. Most of these faces are new to me. Most of these are not the same faces that we saw 4 years ago, that I saw 7 or 8 years ago when I was there. Most of these faces have changed, which tells me there's something going on, that there's a problem, that there's something we need to help them with. People always ask me a couple of questions. I want to get this out of the way before we really get started. One of the questions people always ask me is this. People always say, how did you learn Spanish? And I'll tell you, I'm so old, they didn't teach Spanish in school when I was in high school. And that's a joke. They really did. But I didn't learn in school. When I graduated from high school and started working in construction back in the late 80s, we had an influx of Hispanic people into this area. And they were tremendous workers. They would do things. They weren't bothered by the heat. They would work without complaining, and we loved it. And so we had all these Hispanic guys from Mexico. They couldn't speak to me. I couldn't speak to them. So I just told them, just talk to me like you would your kids. And I kind of absorbed it over the years. Now that kind of has a downfall to it. I was in Peru a couple of years ago and I was talking to a guy from Lima, Peru. And I said something and he laughed and I said, what did I say? And he said, I can tell you learned Spanish from a bunch of Mexicans. I said, please forgive my colloquial expressions. It also has the downfall of I really struggle to read in Spanish because I didn't learn to read in the school. One of the things people always ask me is, what do you hope to accomplish? Or do you do any good? Do you have any results? Things like that. And I always point them to this verse in Philippians 1. If you look in Philippians 1, verse 9 beginning. Paul is speaking to the Philippian church and he says, this is my prayer for you, that your love will grow more and more, that you will have knowledge and understanding with your love, that you will see the difference between good and bad, and you will choose the good, that you will be pure and without wrong for the coming of Christ, that you will be filled with the good things produced in your life by Christ to bring glory and praise to God. That's what I hope to accomplish every time I go there. That's my prayer for the church in Ecuador. But you know what? It's my prayer for the church here too. Because I think we all need to grow in love. We all need to grow in wisdom and in understanding. We all need to grow and put all that together. And we all need to do things to glorify our Lord. Another question people ask me is, why you? Why do you go? And one of the things I say is, well, I don't see a lot of people jumping up and down to go to Machala, Ecuador. There's not that long a line. A couple of years ago when Papa and I went, Chris Barlow went with us and Bob Watson, and you have to separate when you go through immigration in Ecuador. And Chris was standing a lady, and she was asking him his final destination, and Chris hollered at me. He said, Bert, what's the name of that city we're going to? I said, Machala, and the lady looked at him and said, why are you going to Machala? She said, nobody goes there. Chris came out of immigration. He said, what have you gotten me into? I said, you'll find out shortly. If you look back in the first chapter of the book of Mark, one of the things that Jesus Christ said was, he was in Capernaum and he was there and everything was going great and people couldn't even get in the room with him because there were so many crowds. And Jesus said to his disciples one day, he said, let's leave here and go to another city because that's the reason I'm here. I've come to this place to preach the gospel, basically in places where it has not been preached and to do things that nobody else will do. I love the people. I love the culture. And I want to help them in any way that I can. That's why I go. That's what I hope to accomplish. And I hope that along the way I'll impart a little bit of love on your behalf as well. If you look in Acts chapter 15, chapter 14, chapter 15 again, a couple of things I just want you to notice. I remember when I was young growing up at Jackson Drive and these men would come through and they would talk about the work in Africa. And they would talk about the work in different places. Reed Braswell would come and he would talk about the work in Colombia. And I would listen and I would always leave with the same thought in my mind. Why do I care? Why does it matter to me? It doesn't really matter to me. This is a long way away. You look in verse 36, it says, after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, let us go back, visit the brethren in every city where we've preached the word of the Lord and see how they're doing. That shows to me an individual type of concern that Paul and Barnabas had for these people. You look in verse 27, it says, when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them and how he'd opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. That shows the church in Antioch had a congregational concern, if you will. And then in verse 4, it says, when they were at Jerusalem, the apostles and the elders got together. They wanted to know how things were going. That shows us kind of a special concern, if you will. I want to ask you a question. What's your story? What is your story? You look in Acts chapter 25 when Paul was standing before Agrippa, and I'm going to tell you what Paul did was tell Agrippa his story. He said, this is my story. This is how I became a Christian. This is how I got to know the truth. This is what. What's your story? Who are you? In Hebrews 10, we often use this verse to say, you don't need to miss church. And I'm not saying we don't need to use it that way. But it has a deeper meaning. Verse 24, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. Let us consider each other. Really think about each other. About a year ago, I was sitting in a guy's office down in Evergreen, Alabama. And this guy, really nice guy, he was sitting there and we were talking. He said, where are you from? I said, Athens, Alabama. He said, do you know Trey Holiday? I said, yeah, I know Trey Holiday. He said, you really? And I said, yeah. I said, I've been in Trey's office. I know where he lives. I know what his wife's name is. I know his son. I even know where he used to coach football. I know where he went to college. I know Trey, yes. Somebody asks us that sometimes. And we jump and we say, yeah, I know that person. But I want to ask you, do you really know somebody? Do you really know somebody until you have sat down with them? And you hear their struggles and you figure out what's going on in their life and you figure out what they're dealing with? Can you really encourage them? Can you really provoke them to love and good works? Can you really think and consider, what can I do to this person? What can I say to this person? How can I act? How am I going to really make a difference in their life? Because that's what the Hebrew writer is trying to say. You got to consider each other so you can really make a difference in somebody's life. This family on the screen, Papa and I were sitting there, I think it was last Sunday evening, and we were listening to them and talking, and they had some biblical questions. We had a great discussion with them. And if you notice, there's one fellow in the yellow shirt, he only has one leg. And I was asking him what happened to his leg. You know, was he born that way? You see a lot of people down there that are born with physical maladies. He said, no. He said, what happened? He was 7 years old. He was getting on a bus. And he fell. The bus ran over him, and his leg got caught in the bus tire. And there was no hospital in Machala, so 2.5 hours later, he got to a hospital, and his leg was unsalvageable. They had to take it off. Well, I kept noticing the guy in the white back there. He kind of had this funny look in his eyes, and most of the time he would have his eyes closed. Well, come to find out he's mostly blind. He can't see almost at all. He can just make out colors and shapes. And I asked him what happened. Well, he said he has a problem with his cornea, and it must be a hereditary thing. Right here is her eyes. She has the same problem. They're both taking classes and learning to play the violin and learning Braille so that they can read. And incidentally, I was asking them, you know, can we do anything to help you? And they said, yeah, when you come back, I would really like a Braille Bible so that I can read. They are available and we can get them in Spanish. And I told Emily I was going to point her out. She is taking on the project of finding enough money to get one. So if you want to help, see Emily after church. I was asking this guy, I can't believe that happened. You know, that's just awful. And he said, well, it really started when he was 13. He fell out of a window and landed on his head and was in a coma for 3 weeks. And I was telling Papa this, and Papa said, Bert, I don't know if we need to be here. These people are accident prone. I said, yeah, it's kind of scary. But you know what? These folks, this is the poorest family I have ever visited in Ecuador. They literally had nothing. No indoor plumbing, no indoor bathroom, nothing. But they were just as happy. They offered us what they had. They did. They showed us hospitality in ways that we can't imagine. This is Elias and Inez. He preaches there in Machala. And I want to tell you a little bit about Elias. And Atina, I'm going to tell you, when a few years ago Elias came and stayed with us, and we took him to Pleasant Valley with us, and he and Inez were there, and I remember Ruth Blakely loved them. And she said, I am so glad I finally met a grown-up that's shorter than I am. They are special people to me. And I knew that Elias was struggling. I knew they had had problems, and I knew things had gone on in their life and in their children's lives that were hindering them and affecting them and the work there. But I didn't know how bad it was until I got there. I told you, Elias started the work there in about 2005. He had been a member of a denominational church. He was telling Papa and I his story, what happened and how he got there. Well, he said one day he was reading his Bible, and he kept noticing when it would talk about elders or pastors or bishops, he said he kept noticing how to talk about them as being the husband of one wife, having children. And he said the guy that was the pastor at the church where they were, he was a young guy, wasn't married, had no children. He went to him and he said, what's up? He said, I keep reading this in the Bible and this is what I'm seeing. The guy told him, said, just don't worry about it. Well, Elias Inez had a cousin that was a member of the church up in Cuenca, different city. They called him. They started studying with him. They would go up there when they could. And eventually they got to the point that they were ready to be baptized. Now then, they had a problem. The problem is, in Ecuador is like in Mexico and a lot of other cultures that are Hispanic. They have this thing, and they call it a union libre. And what that literally means is a free union. What we call it is a cohabitation without commitment. And Elias and Inez were not married at this point. They had been living together and had 5-6 kids. And all of a sudden, they start learning that they need to change. And the guy that was studying with them, he looked across the table with them and said, are y'all married? And Inez said, no. So he said, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. So Inez told me, she said, they literally got baptized, walked out of the baptistry, and got married. So, you know, Things work out in different ways in different cultures. Elias studied his way out of that because of the fact that he didn't take something just for granted. He didn't just say, well, okay, he says it's okay, so it must be. He kept on studying and he kept trying and he worked. And so many times I see in our lives, and I'm guilty of this, someone says something to me and I'm like, yeah, okay. I've never heard that before, but, you know, it's okay. Yeah, it must be true. Must be the way it's supposed to be. Elias has got some problems. He's got health problems. They've had problems in their family. They've had problems in the church related to the problems in their family. All of these things that I'm about to tell you are kind of intertwined, so I hope you can keep up. Elias and Inez have 6 kids. Child was married to a young lady named Fernanda. I'll show you a picture of her in a minute. And Yvonne left his wife. Now, they were living with Elias and Inez. He left his wife, started living with another girl. That has torn Elias and Inez up beyond belief. It's caused division in the church because of the stand that Elias and Inez have taken on this. We had talked about it for a while and sat there and shed a few tears over it. And I was upstairs and I came out of the restroom and I looked and Papa was sitting there on a stool and Elias was sitting here. And I looked and I said, what are y'all doing here? Papa said, I have no idea. He said, he just told me to follow him and sit down. So Elias asked me to sit down. So I sit down and Elias takes out his Bible and starts reading from 1 Corinthians 5. And he starts talking about, this is what I think I'm supposed to do. This is how I think I'm supposed to treat my son. Because of what he's done and how he's living and how... And he looked at Papa and I, and after he had read this and after he'd made a few comments, and he said, right? I said, yeah. It wasn't easy for him. Some of the people left the church because of what he thought he needed to do in regards to his son. But he made that choice. And that's a difficult decision to make. But it's what he believed he needed to do based on what he reads in the book, based on his understanding of it. And he said, this is what the Bible tells me to do, and I'm going to do it. No matter how hard it is. No matter how uncomfortable. He said, I'm going to do it. I want to tell you something. This is Fernanda. I have to back up and tell you one more thing about Elias. I forgot to tell you about this. I mentioned his health problems last Sunday when after services he was sitting there. And I could tell he wasn't feeling good. I noticed he'd been wearing flip-flops the whole time. Didn't wear shoes most of the time. And he has a really, really bad ingrown toenail that's infected. After service, he was sitting there. He wasn't feeling good. I knew he was diabetic. I said, why don't you check your blood sugar? Yeah. I asked Brady just before I got up here what normal blood sugar is, and just say less than 100, about 80. Okay? Elias checked his blood sugar with his little AccuCheck meter, and it says 396. So I said, wow, I didn't know what it was. So I got my phone, took a picture of it, and sent Brady a picture. I said, is this normal? Brady sent me a text back, said, no. He's got other health issues. And you need to understand something about the medical conditions in Ecuador. There is socialized medicine, and then there is private medicine. Private medicine is very expensive. Socialized medicine is free, but you get what you pay for sometimes. Luckily, Brady, he said, I'll go down with you, and we'll take care of his medical issues. So I hope we can, because he needs it. He has some real problems that we've got to wade through. This is a picture of Fernanda. She's the young lady that was married to Yvonne. Now, at the time of their separation, they were living with Elias and Inez. When Ivan, Yvonne decided to move with another lady, they wanted Fernanda to stay with them in the house, stay there. She was a member of the church. She was part of their family. I look at it and I think, I know exactly why they wanted her to stay. Because they cared about her and they knew it would be easier for Yvonne to come back. But I also look at it from her standpoint, her point of view, and I think, you know, that would be so difficult Because in a male-dominated society where your worth is based on your husband and your children, and she had neither, she felt so small and so insignificant. And she just had to get out. Now, she was at church with us on Friday evening when we were there. And that's the first time she had been in a service in 2.5 years. And I'm going to tell you honestly, folks, the only reason she was there, the only reason was because Papa had maintained a relationship with her. When we were there 4 years ago, he got to know her, and she was studying in a culinary school, wanting to be a chef, and he owned a restaurant, so they just had an instant connection and struck up a friendship. We got home, and I remember I was at a basketball one night, and Papa starts sending me text messages with screenshots. He says, "What is she saying? How do I respond to this?" And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm trying to watch a basketball game. Do I have to do this now? They kept a relationship going with her and got to know her, even though he was 4,000 miles away, because he cared about her. And I love these two pictures. The one on your left is of us 4 years ago when we were there. And you can kind of see the posture of Papa. He didn't really know what to do. But you look at the one on the right and you see the love and care and concern. He started sending her messages as soon as we got there, telling her we were going to be there and wanted to see her. And I'll never forget the look on her face. She walked into that church service. She was a few minutes late. She walked in and she was so nervous. She was scared to death. Can you imagine walking in here with these people after you've been gone for 2.5 years? That your husband had left you and he'd walked out on you and you were shamed, basically? Can you imagine walking in here late and everybody, just every eye being on you? I don't know what'll happen in her life from this point on. I do know that she talked to us a little bit, told us she really wanted to come back, that she missed her church family. And that's why it's so important, ladies and gentlemen, for us to get to know people, for us to get to know their story and spend time with them and to sit down across the table with them and learn what's going on in their life in a deeper way than where you live, who your wife is, and where you went to college. We look at people on social media and we think we can learn everything about them from that. You can't learn the struggles that somebody feels. You can't learn what's going on in somebody's life. And you sure can't figure out why it is that somebody hadn't been to a worship service in 2.5 years via social media. You got to get to know people if you're going to really provoke them to love and to good works and to help them in their lives. This is Jose and Yolanda. Now, I'm going to tell you something about Jose and Yolanda, okay? This is Yolanda. This is Jose. That's two of their children. They have five. These are the two youngest. Their oldest child is 22 years old. Yolanda is 36. Do you need a minute to do the math? She was 14 years old when she had her first child. 14. She was 13 when she got married. He's 10 years older than her. It's a little bit of a culture shock when you find out things like that. But you know what? It's their culture. There's nothing wrong with it. It's their business. They are some of the best people I have ever met in my life. The hardest working, the most diligent. And I'll tell you, we were asking them what we can do to help you, what we can do to help the church here. What do you need from us? He never said, money, give it to me. He said, we could really use you guys to come back here and teach us and study with us and help us and have classes with us. And I said, yeah, hey, we'll be glad to. We started talking about it. And I said, maybe we could get some ladies to go. And they'd be willing to teach the younger ladies. And they'd be willing to help them. And he looked at me with this kind of funny look on his face. He said, is that biblical? He said, in Spanish. And I said, sure it is. And you know what he said? He didn't say, okay, I got it. He said, where? So I thought, wow, we got to get out the Bible. So we got out the Bible and I turned and I showed him. I said, look here, let the older women teach the younger women to love their husbands, to be chaste. You know, he's like, wow, it is. I love that attitude where we don't just take things for granted and don't just take something somebody says and it's new and it's different. And it must be true. Where they look at things and really say, is this what the book tells me to do? Papa and I got there one day and Jose and Yolanda were sitting there at a little table together and they were drawing out this little map. And they were trying to tell us where all these different churches are. And he was trying to, he said, you know, we need to talk about this because we think if you can go here and do this, that we can have classes and we can teach these people and we can work and we can help the churches in all these different places. And I told Papa, I said, this is great. This just means that they're thinking about it and trying to figure out a way to accomplish something that's really good. This is one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life. This man is 36 years old. He had a stroke. His name is Luis. He is completely paralyzed, completely on his left side. He has no movement whatsoever. When we went to see him, he was laying on a mattress just in the floor of his house. He has a pretty good business going. He's a rice distributor. We walked in their garage and they just stacks of 100-pound sacks of rice that they were selling to different places. He has a 14-year-old son. And I was sitting there the whole time when he was talking about it. And he was talking to us about how he can't do anything anymore. And I was just thinking, what would my life be like if I couldn't go outside and play with Rhett? How would it make me feel if I couldn't play basketball with my son? If I couldn't throw the ball, if I couldn't stand up, if I couldn't play golf with him, if I couldn't do these things that we as fathers love to do. And here he is laying on a mat, his son sitting behind him, holding him up literally. He hadn't been at church since the stroke happened. Sunday morning, he came in a few minutes late, sat there at the front. They do things a little differently. He wanted to speak after service. Here we have an invitation song. We say, come down the front if you need help, if you need to make confession. If you need... There, at the end of service, if you got something you want to say, just say, I need to say something. They turned him around so he could speak to the congregation. You can see the emotion. And I'm going to paraphrase what he said. But he said, before his stroke, he thought that it was so important for him to run his business and to make a living. And sometimes he wouldn't be there because he would be working. He'd be gone to Guayaquil to pick up rice. Been gone somewhere to deliver it. He said, I'm so sorry that it took something like this to make me realize I was wrong. After he got finished, his wife wanted to say something. And in Ecuadorian standards, they have a nice house. Very nice. They do probably better than anyone else at that congregation financially. She stood up and she said, I've learned what really matters in life. It's not things, and it's not money. I've learned what's really important. I asked him if he was going to therapy or doing anything to make you thankful for our medical system. He said, yeah, I go once every 2 weeks to therapy. Every 2 weeks. I just think, is he ever going to get better? But you know what? While I'm so sad for the way that his body is, I heard what he said and I understand that he understands now what's really important. The things that really matter. There we go. All right, this is Ruth. She is one of Elias and Inez's six children. It's her little boy, Isaac. Cutest little boy you ever saw. And he loved me. It was like trying to get a spider monkey off of you when he'd sit in my lap. He'd hold on. I don't think I heard him say a word. He's 18 months old. Ruth does not have a husband. Ruth has never been married. Ruth made a mistake about 2 years ago. You need to understand something about the education system in Ecuador. If you're an Ecuadorian citizen, you can go to college free. But the quality of the college that you get into is directly related to what kind of grades you make and how well you do on a test. Ruth had done very well on the test, made good grades. She got into a good university in Cuenca, one of the better universities in the whole country. Well, Ruth found out she was pregnant, and they had daycare. They would have helped her take care of the child. She could have continued her education. It's like a lot of things. You drop out, you start over at the bottom. She left school, moved back home to Machala, nasty city, with her parents. And me, like the ignorant person that I am, asked why. I said, why did you do that? Because she was talking about how good the school was. Her eyes kind of welled up with tears, and she said, I needed to. She said, I needed to, not because I needed help with Isaac. She said, I needed to come back to Machala, live with my parents, so I could be what I need to be. She made a choice to give up a free education, give up on everything, walk away from all this stuff because she had made a mistake and she wanted to do better. And she said, this is what I need to do better. I'm not excusing what she did. I'm not saying it wasn't wrong. Because she told me that when she came back to that church in Machala, people left the church because she came back. And she told me how hard it was for her to stand up and say, I'm sorry. But today, she's better off. Today, she's a better person. Today, she's working and she's moving and she's going forward. Now, what are the odds that she's ever going to find a Christian husband in Machala, Ecuador? Slim to none. Let's just be honest about it. Right now, what's important in her life is that little boy. Right now, what's important in her life is her soul and her relationship with her God. She's 32 years old. She looks at it and says, my biological clock is ticking. How much time do I really have left to get married, have a family, do all these things? But that doesn't matter because what matters is the fact that she wants to be a Christian. She wants to be better. She stood up and she said, I messed up. And I want to fix it. I'll tell you something. I can learn so many lessons from these people. I can learn lessons from Elias and Inez about working through difficult situations and standing up for what I believe is right. I can learn lessons from Jose and Yolanda about being diligent and working hard and trying my best to do what I can wherever I can. I can learn lessons from that first family about how sometimes things just don't go well. I can learn lessons from Luis about what's really important in life. I can learn a lesson about forgiveness from Ruth. About asking for forgiveness and saying I was wrong. About making tough decisions and trying to do better and trying to change my life. None of it's easy. I want to tell you, when I got on an airplane the other day to come back home, I had my carry-on bag, I had my backpack, checked my bag, got on the airplane. Had all this stuff I was bringing home. I'll tell you what, I carried something else home with me. I found myself feeling so guilty. And on that 4-hour flight from Quito to Miami, so many times I'd close my eyes and ask God's forgiveness. As I told you years ago, I had made several trips there. And I would go regularly. I hadn't been in 4 years because I got so caught up trying to make something of myself. I got so caught up doing things, trying to make a living, that I forgot about doing things, trying to help someone else make a life. It is so easy for us to just look at ourselves. It's so easy for me, and I'm so sorry. As I told Papa, I said, all the things that they've gone through, we could have helped them through those things. And they might be better off today. It's so easy to look at ourselves. But it's so important to look at other people. And to look around. And to get to know each other. To listen to somebody's story. And to say to them, how can I help you be a better person? Be closer to God. Fix the problems in your life. Do what you need to do. Make the change that you need to make. I want to leave this. I wish I could leave this picture of Ruth up here while we sing the invitation song. Just so you could look at her and you could realize she had everything going for her, and she could have she could have stayed in school. She could have finished her degree. She could have gotten a much better job in a better place. But she gave it up because she wanted to be a Christian. She wanted to do what was right. She had made a mistake and she wasn't afraid to say it and she wasn't afraid to change. And that does so much for me. And I'm so thankful that she is. Where are you today? What's your story? What do you lack? What do you need? What can we help you fix, take care of? If you need to change your life, if you need to change your life, and I mean really change, why don't you do it today? I'm going to tell you, you can find 1,000 reasons to put it off till tomorrow. You can find 150,000 reasons to say, I'll do it a different way, a different day, I'll change a different time, I'll wait another day because there'll be a more convenient time. It'll be better. Ruth told me that when she found out she was pregnant, she packed her things and went back home on the next bus. She didn't sit there and think about it. She did what she needed to do. What do you need to do this morning? What change do you need to make? And how can we help you while we stand up and while we sing?